Good afternoon. Welcome to everybody. Very happy that you came. And I was just talking with somebody who has type 1 diabetes. And he has been 71 years a type 1 diabetic. That's probably a record. And he describes himself as a health nut, and I could believe it. Apart from him, I think 50-something years is the longest I've known someone with type 1 diabetes to go. That's a record and a testimony to healthful living. And our healthful living is a spiritual matter. It's a way that we can communicate with our Heavenly Father, because we often need to say, Lord, help me to know what to do in this case. Or, Lord, help me to resist the temptation that I have to do something that's not helpful, such as stay up late to get a piece of work done, or eat that second helping of this or that. I remember George Vandeman told me one time about going to bed. He said, lights have switches and you can turn them off. So I was very happy to hear that. Not always possible to turn off the light at the right time, but if you're aware that lights have switches that you can turn off, it is a help to you. So that when the time comes to go to bed, the focus should be on getting in the bed, not on getting a little bit more done or setting something out for tomorrow. It should be then the focus on getting into the bed. Our topic today is diabetes, and as with all other diseases of what we call lifestyle, we need the work of the Holy Spirit in our lives, and we need the determination in our hearts to do what we know. And most of us have to say that we know better than we do, don't we? So today we need to determine that we will do as well as we know within the realm of reason without becoming neurotic about it. I once worked with a man who, if he were 5 minutes over his meal time, he would simply excuse himself and go and get his meal. And that caused quite a great deal of problem in his mother-in-law's home. And I felt that a higher law was keeping peace, because being peaceful is also a health measure, isn't it? So since these things are spiritually understood, let's pray and ask the Lord to help us. Dear Father, we're grateful that you've revealed to us the laws that deal with health and the joy that we can have in communing with Thee over certain matters having to do with our behavior, our health behavior. And so as we study this very important lifestyle disease today, I pray that your Holy Spirit would be our guide and our teacher and would impress our hearts with just how we should understand these great principles. These things we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. I mentioned yesterday that diabetes type 1 and diabetes type 2 are two totally different diseases. Type 1 is caused by an absolute reduction in insulin, caused by a loss or failure of the beta cells of the islets of Langerhans. These are the endocrine-producing organs inside the pancreas. They are tiny islands of certain types of cells, and some of these cells produce glucagon, and some produce insulin. Glucagon keeps the blood sugar from going too low. Insulin keeps the blood sugar from going too high. And so we can understand the functions of the pancreas by understanding both of these endocrine functions. Glucagon is also an endocrine substance. And so if we can understand this very powerful organ, we will understand another thing, and that is that it is not good for us to crank up this very heavy duty machinery all the time. So that immediately precludes our eating between meals, does it not? So snacking is not for us. Snacking is all right for certain animals. We call that grazing, but it's not for humans. Humans do better on a mealtime schedule, and our mealtime period is different from other animals. Some animals, some large dogs, eat once a day, but they may eat half a small pig at that meal. Then they don't eat for a long time. Same thing with certain reptiles. They will eat a very large meal and not eat again for a month. That's their period, their meal period. But for human beings, physiologically speaking, our meal period is two meals a day. Which ones? Most of the world only eats two meals a day. They eat the wrong two meals. They eat lunch and dinner. Lunch and dinner. But I can remember in the South, and perhaps some of you can also, when dinner was a midday meal. And supper was something sucked from a cup and was small, something left over from lunch. Some of you will remember those days, and it was a smaller meal than lunchtime. Lunch was the biggest meal of the day, probably, for most people. Although breakfast was also a substantial meal, a meal that you could count on, you could work on it until lunchtime. And then at lunchtime, you had another substantial meal that you could work doing physical labor until supper time. So we work on breakfast, we work on lunch, but we sleep on supper. So the bigger it is, the more troubled the sleep, and the less well our physiological processes that are dependent on sleep can happen. Now with sleep, the best time of day for sleep to occur, the best time of day is in the early part of the evening, after 6 p.m. So as early as we can, after 6 p.m., we should be thinking about getting into the bed. And for most people, it works out pretty well to go to bed at between 7:30 and 9:30. And those are pretty good hours, 7:30 to 9:30. What is the reason for that? Well, there probably are several, but one that we know very clearly is that the growth hormone that an adult produces is produced mainly before midnight and only during sleep. Only during sleep. We do not produce it when we are awake or up. So we need that growth hormone as adults. Not that we're going to be growing taller, and hopefully not bigger around either, but we need it for cheerfulness, for organization of our thoughts, for accomplishment of tasks such as housekeeping. And people who do not sleep before midnight are more likely to have a disorganized house than those who do get sleep before midnight. I know that that's an area that I could get trampled on, so I won't spend too much time on that other than to say the most favorable time for you to sleep is before midnight. So much more favorable that an hour of sleep before midnight is worth roughly twice as much as an hour after midnight is worth. So if we can get a full 90-minute cycle, 90-minute sleep cycle, which is usually the length of time of our first sleep cycle in the evening. The first sleep cycle is usually 90 minutes. So if we can get the entire sleep cycle and then back up again to light sleep before midnight, we will get a full increment of growth hormone in that period. And that will be helpful to us. If we can get two increments, and the growth hormone is put out in spurts, not in a steady stream. And so we, during the cycle, during a sleep cycle, we will get an injection, so to speak, of growth hormone. If we have two sleep cycles before midnight, we can get more growth hormone, which makes us more intelligent, more cheerful, more organized, have better creative ability. I believe we can even understand the scriptures better. Yes, question. Is there any hope for a night nurse? Well, I have done my share of night duty. People don't get sick just at the one's convenience. They're sick all the day, and someone has to care for the sick during the night time. But my counsel to you is this. If you are a night nurse, try to work yourself out of night duty by the time you're 50. We did a home birth service for about 10 years at UT Pines, and some of you sitting here have been with me attending births in the home. I think they were all born at night. I don't remember any that was born in the daytime. And yet we all had to work the next day. So we delivered the baby and then went to work the next morning. And if you had two or three in 1 week, you were tired more than just a little. So when I was about 50, I decided that my time had been served as a midwife, and so I began to put that in the hands of younger women. And I think that's a good practice, to try to work yourself out of a nighttime job if you can when you're about 50. Now, the hard, cold statistics are these, that in the same geographic and socioeconomic and geographical area, a night working person will live about 5 to 6 years less long than a daytime person. We do have a circadian rhythm, and the circadian rhythm, generally our metabolic systems go up and then come down during the period of a day. We might think that if we work at night, we eat at night, we get up, we are awake at night, that our circadian rhythm would simply turn upside down. But it doesn't do that. About the best that we can ever hope for is a flattening of the daytime curve. But we don't ever get a real turnaround. And that puts a strain on the body and on the mind as well. And so we should try to be daytime people as well as we can. Now you see my contact information on the screen, and some of you will want to write that down. And those of you who don't and ask me for it afterward, I do have this afternoon a little card that I can give you, but I do hope you'll write it down. Diabetes can be reversed if it is type 2. It cannot be reversed if it is type 1, because we cannot, at least not at the present time, generate more islets of Langerhans. We can, there are some injection procedures of islet cells that are hoped to be helpful, but those haven't been perfected yet so far as I know. But through lifestyle changes, we can make a lot of difference in this lifestyle disease. And type 2 diabetes is largely a lifestyle disease, if not entirely. Now, diabetics generally feel that they should not take carbohydrates. I hope that after this class, you will not continue to feel that way, that you will recognize that there are enormous benefits in foods that are very high in carbohydrates, such benefits that you cannot afford to miss these. Carbohydrates, we need about perhaps 70 to 80 or 85% of our calories in the form of carbohydrate, as well as I can figure. There are end products of carbohydrate metabolism that I need to study with you, and I hope that I can get through all of the material on diabetes so that I can get into this subject of the toxic glycation products from wrong handling of carbohydrates. The types of carbohydrates that we have are mono, di, and oligo and polysaccharides. These are sugars, meaning mono is one, di two, oligo is few, and poly is many sugar molecules together. Fiber, starch, dextrins, maltose, glucose. Those are dextrins. Glucose is actually a monosaccharide. I have that in the wrong place. Alcohols, there are a number of alcohols. Methyl, propyl, isopropyl, butyl, and many others. The only one that is considered a beverage alcohol is which one? Ethyl. Ethyl alcohol is considered a beverage alcohol, but it also is a poison. And as a physician, I cannot tell you to take this kind of poison. So alcohol is a no-no, and we should all be teetotalers. Now, many of us are teetotalers unless we overeat. If we overeat, then we will be producing alcohols, but not ethyl. The form of alcohols that we produce are the much more toxic ones, like these that you see, methyl, propyl, isopropyl, butyl, and many others that are toxic alcohols, the most toxic ones. And one of the reasons why, as we age, we get poor eyesight, poor hearing, our other delicate senses in the head begin to diminish, smell and taste and so forth. These diminish because of our overproduction of alcohols. How do we do that? Well, it is through wrong habits of eating that make us produce the alcohol. One of those is eating between meals. Another is eating before we go to bed. Another is that we eat too many varieties at a meal. Those are all drinking with one's meals. These all encourage the production of alcohol. And there is a researcher in Kentucky who called me a couple of years ago and asked me about some research that we did many years ago on blood alcohol levels in non-drinkers. And we got about 25 to 30 volunteers from among Seventh-day Adventists, all of whom I knew did not take alcohol in any form. And we drew five samples of blood on these throughout the day, beginning before breakfast and just before and ending just at bedtime. Five samples. And of these, there were two who had enough blood alcohol or enough reducing substances of the form of blood alcohols that if they had been stopped and checked, stopped to drink in their driving and checked for drinking, they would not have passed. The policeman would probably have wondered if they had been drinking. Although no one was actually drunk, they did have reducing substances in the blood of the kind that alcohols are. So just to let you know that this researcher in Kentucky says that the average American produces the equivalent of one quart of beer every day by their digestive tracts. An enormous amount of alcoholic drink, isn't it? And so sometimes we get a little unsteady on the feet. Maybe it's because an alcohol level has risen in our blood for some kind of alcohol. Now, the function of carbohydrates is for energy, for heat, for making fats, for storage, and for our thoughts. The brain uses only glucose to run its heavy machinery. And so if we do not have glucose available, but only fats available for the brain, then the brain will suffer. Let's take grains. How many grains? Well, breakfast 2, lunch 2, supper 1, or none. Serving size, what is appropriate for you, and actually no physician can tell you how many servings you need of anything. You must figure that out for yourself, but there are several hints to you. We mentioned one yesterday, and that's the tape measure test. You pull that around here, and the tape measure tells you whether you're eating too many servings or not. So we want to pay attention to that. You can step on a scale, and it will tell you. Then there are other things that can tell you. Do you have bad breath? Do you have difficulty sleeping? Constipation may mean that you are eating too many varieties at a meal. May mean that you're not drinking enough water. Then there are a variety of other things that may have to do with constipation. We'll touch on that a little later. The layers of a grain, as you can see, are listed there. And each of these layers is important to you. These are the bran, the vitamin and mineral, and starch and protein layers, and the germ. And these are very important. Each of these is very important to us. And if we miss one, we're going to miss some very important nutrients. So we want to get them all. Therefore, whole grains are necessary for us. The importance of to a diabetic, bread is the staff of life to a diabetic. So we should not neglect breads if we are a diabetic. If you want to avoid diabetes, if you have diabetes in your family and you need to avoid diabetes, eat grains and especially beans. Beans are high carbohydrate foods. They also have good protein, but principally they are carbohydrate, good high carbohydrate food, and they are especially good for diabetics. And I think you'll understand some reasons for that when we finish this class. Let's take some fruits. How many servings? 3 to 5 at breakfast. 1 or none at supper. Probably none for lunch unless you're having a fruit meal for lunch. Generally speaking, fruits go in one meal and vegetables in another. And one of the reasons for that is that it requires a certain group of enzymes to digest vegetables and a certain group to digest fruits. And if we have them all at one time, it's a tax on the body, especially a tax on the liver. So we want to be careful that we don't take too many varieties at a meal and fruits and vegetables at the same meal. Do you eat the bread with the fruits? And I don't know any reason biochemically or physiologically why we should not. There are some people who do not do well when they take fruits and grains together, and so I say that's fine. But I don't know of any physiologic or biochemical reason not to mix a grain with an acid fruit or a starch of any kind. Yes? Cantaloupe is a vegetable. Yes. Melons are vegetables, just like their double first cousin, cucumbers and squash. Isn't that nice? The Lord provided a dessert for us for lunch as well as for our fruit meals. And pineapple and strawberries, some say that because the seeds are on the outside of these, that they should be classified as vegetables and that the interior is a swollen stem. But I think that they probably were classified by the prophetess as fruits. So that's how I classify them too. If they come from any permanent installation, such as a strawberry bed or a pineapple grove, then I would consider them a fruit. And tomatoes. Ellen White said this, which is interesting, and she was the one who first told us not to put fruits and vegetables at the same meal. And she wrote somewhere, we have no fruit this time of year. Tomatoes, however, are common, are plentiful. So it seems to me she was putting a distinction between fruits and tomatoes. Now, if you ask a botanist if tomato is a fruit, the botanist will tell you, yes, it's a fruit. But then so are melons and nuts and grains. And, you know, it's the fruit of that plant. But Ellen White was not a botanist, so I tend to feel that we should classify it because of its the fact that it was grown in the garden. She also said the vegetable garden, where tomatoes are grown, and the fruit orchard. So that's another way that we can know. Now, if you are going to eat fruits and vegetables at the same meal, let me give you a good menu. I ate this meal one time. In fact, I ate it several Sabbaths in a row. It was in London. Mark Finley was having a large crusade there, probably back in the 1980s. And my husband and I were there helping him that crusade. And the church, the local church, fed us lunch every Sabbath, the whole team. And there were some 70 of us in that team from various countries of the world. It was a large crusade. And the lunch that we had consisted of one or two slices of bread, depending on your own choice. You could take one or two. An orange and a potato. That was it. That was lunch. And we had that several meals in a row. And I ate my orange and my potato together and did not feel bad about it at all. The meal was so simple that I didn't think I would have any difficulty in digesting those two things with bread. It was very nourishing. I felt very well fed after we had finished with that. Now, the serving size, consider your weight, your blood sugar level, and your comfort. If you feel uncomfortable after you have eaten, it's very likely that you have overeaten. Then forms of fruits, they can be juiced, frozen, dried, fresh. They can be chopped or whole. And in my household, when I serve a meal to a group and I'm going to serve fruit, I know that the very fine hostess will peel the fruit and chop them and make a salad. But when I serve fruit, I serve them in large platters on the table, already washed, washed with soap, by the way. I wash my fruits with soap if I'm going to serve them on the table. Why? If you go to the market, you will see why. Because the people come by and they wipe their noses, and then they pick up the fruit and examine it. And I don't feel comfortable then serving that fruit on my table without washing it. And so I wash it with soap and rinse it well. Now, I come to a problem when I get to grapes, because they are more difficult to wash with soap. But they can also be washed in soap. You souse them up and down and gently rub the outside of the outside grapes, and then souse them up and down in three separate rinses of water. Also, if you've ever worked overseas and gone to an outdoor market, you will also understand why I want to wash my vegetables and fruits with soap before I serve them, where people are going to be handling them and then picking up their bread and eating that. So get the fruit in a form that you can serve easily, and know that in any form that you serve it, it will be very nourishing. Now, I'd like to study with you some very special nutrients. Notice these nutrients. These are, and I'm not certain where I can stand, that you can both see the screen, and I won't have a problem with the speaker. But notice this. Resveratrol. Do you know the best source of this anticoagulant? It's from grapes, as we've illustrated there. Resveratrol is very high in purple or red grapes, and so you may take that. It helps your blood not to clot so readily inside your blood vessels. The Lord has given us that, just as He has given us certain foods that will inhibit the overactivity of the thyroid and can help us to stay calm and yet the thyroid can be under the influence of the pituitary. So that's good. Are grapes the only place that you can find resveratrol? If you're sensitive to grapes, are you just out of luck so far as resveratrol is concerned? The answer is no. It's in many fruits, many different fruits, just not as high as it is in grapes. Yes? Grape juice is also very good. You may use Welch's, which you can get from the grocery store, or any kind of grapes or grape juice. You may use that. Then the next is ellagic acid, prevents gout, has anti-cancer properties, and cherries are one of the best sources. The only source? No, as with all other of these nutrients that I will be talking with you about, they're present not just in one, but in many. And I will just mention one or two having the highest level. How good an anticoagulant is resveratrol? Well, one researcher did a study comparing a baby aspirin a day and 5 ounces of grape juice twice a day. And he found that the grape juice was slightly more effective than the aspirin a day in preventing blood from clotting. It was not a lot, but it was enough to just say, well, it's at least a little better than aspirin. Vitamin C is present in many places, especially in raw fruits and vegetables. Beta-carotene and its double first cousin, alpha-carotene, these are both very helpful in anti-cancer programs and also in heart-healthy programs. You will find those as an anti-aging factor. Coumarins. What do you think coumarins would be? Well, of course, they prevent excessive clotting. And coumarins are present in clover and in apples and many other fruits and vegetables. So coumarins, what do you think coumarins do? Well, they mimic dicoumerol or Coumadin, a drug that many of you will be familiar with. So we can have some, if we take resveratrol from grapes and we take coumarins from apples, we have done ourselves a good deed, haven't we? So the big problem is that we don't eat these as much as we should. We should take our mother's advice when she said, eat your fruits and eat your vegetables. Limonoids, they disarm carcinogens, and they are present, of course, in all the citrus fruits. Plant enzymes and sterols, they have anti-clotting activity and anti-cancer activity, and they are present widely in fruits and vegetables. Now, some other special nutrients. Allium. Who can tell me where that comes from? From garlic and onions and other members of that family, but especially from garlic. Quercetin. Who can tell me where that comes from? Onions. Highest in onions. Quercetin has, notice that it has an anti-cancer substance, is quercetin. Also cyanidins, which are present in any kind of blue fruit or vegetable, like blueberries and certain raspberries, certain grapes, eggplant, and other blue things. Anything that's blue will have cyanidins in it, and those have anti-cancer activity. They are among the flavonoids. Lycopenes, where do they come from? Yes, you mentioned tomatoes. Anything else that you know of? Watermelon or any other thing that's red. If the red color is due to the lycopenes. What does lycopene do for us? It's an anti-cancer substance, an anti-cancer nutrient. The Lord put it there for our age, the age of cancer. This is the age of cancer. And the Lord put it there for this age of cancer. When did He put it there? About 3 decades ago when we started being in the when we needed these anti-cancer nutrients? No, they've always been there. Always been there. There is no place No place in all of nature where we say, the Lord hasn't provided this for us yet. We're still evolving that one. There's no place in nature where that can be said. And that certainly can be said of our nutrients. We have everything in nature that we need. Everything that we need to fight any kind of disease, I believe, is already in nature. We just have not discovered it. Many of these things that I'm teaching you right now, I could not have taught you 10 years ago because we didn't know them 10 years ago. Now, proteins. How many servings do we need? Well, probably you don't even have to worry about proteins. Why is that? Because any kind of reasonable diet, any reasonable diet, will give you enough protein. Any reasonable diet will give you enough calcium. Why? Because both of these nutrients are so urgently needed in the body that we cannot live without them. And so the Lord put them in everything. There is no food, no natural food, that does not have protein in it. And that almost can be said for, and probably can be, I'm just not entirely knowledgeable about if every food has calcium, but I suspect that it probably does. Have a little bit, every natural food has a little bit of calcium, I suspect. But I don't know that. I do know it about protein, that you cannot get any food that does not have some protein in it. Now, where the sources? Well, plants, nuts, legumes, these are particularly high, but you can also get it from purified sources or concentrated sources such as the meat analogs or protein derivatives. Then animal sources, there are many animal sources, meat, milk, eggs, and cheese. Those have protein in them. But there is a downside of the protein that comes from animals. Let's study this downside of animal protein. They come along with viruses for cancer, possibly for multiple sclerosis, and unknown. There are many suspects, such as the prions that cause the mad cow disease. Those probably are transmitted to humans. And bacteria, diabetogenic factors, especially is that true in dairy products, milk, and other dairy products have diabetogenic. Diabetogenic factors are factors that encourage diabetes because of the insulin-like growth factor present in dairy products. We have then diabetogenic factors. More about that in a little bit. Adverse eye factors are from animal proteins. Metabolic burden on the kidneys and on the liver, so that in every country of the world where there is a high intake of animal protein, there is a high incidence of liver failure and kidney failure. And of course the United States is not alone in that. Now let's look at fats. Fats are present widely in our foods. Even our greens have some fat in them. Carrots have some fat in them. Olives have a lot of fat. Avocados have a lot of fat. So do nuts and grains. These all have a lot of fats in them. But we find fats in a combined form or in a purified form. If we eat a refined fat, it's going to be what? What? Can be hard fats such as margarine and Crisco. It can be a trans fat. That's an altered fat. In nature, all fats occur as cis fats. But when they are processed, then they may become trans fats. Here is a complex fat. It has a lot of fatty acids on the inside, which actually interdigitate with this external core as well. The external core has more in the way of proteins and carbohydrates and vitamin and mineral complexes that make a union which is loose. It can be broken by physical things such as centrifuging or putting through a high-speed auger-type mill such as a champion juicer or a similar organ, machine that has a high-speed auger-type mill that grinds and heats the nut or the seed. When we do that, when we put it through some kind of processor, then we separate the fatty acids from the other parts, and we get a free fat such as margarine, also mayonnaise, high in fat, free fat, fried foods, cooking fats, salad oils, and nut butters. So these are free fats. These have free fats in them. Yeah. They're bad. Is it bad? No. It's not bad, but it must be evaluated. Am I the person who can eat these free fats? If I'm diabetic, chances are pretty good I cannot. If I am not diabetic, not overweight, do not have arthritis, do not have hypertension, I probably can. Do you see? So each person has to be evaluated and has to know, who am I? Sorry? Does that contain the natural peanut butter? Yes, the kind that you make in your own kitchen from peanuts that you yourself have toasted. When you put it through a champion juicer, it will come out as peanut butter. And if you set it on the shelf, what will happen to the fat? That means it's a free fat. Do you see? But you can put the peanuts on the shelf for years, and it will never separate, will it? Okay, then could a person who has diabetes, or who is overweight, or who has hypertension, or who has cancer, or who has some other diseases like multiple sclerosis that we might prohibit free fats, can they eat nuts? Yes. Can they eat peanuts? Yes. Could they grind them in a blender? Yes, provided it doesn't separate the fats. Now, why is that? How is it they could eat the peanuts, but not the peanut butter? That's not reasonable, is it? Unless you know physiology. Now, here's what you need to know in order to know what you should do, how you should behave in regard to peanut butter. Here is the combined fat granule or molecule right here. When this fat granule gets to the duodenum, what's the duodenum? First part of the small bowel. It will get an address label put on it. Now, you know a little about address labels. You know that iodine is addressed. Where is iodine addressed to? The thyroid. You know a little bit about iron. When iron is addressed, where is it addressed to? The blood, the bone marrow, the spleen, maybe a little to the certain cells of the liver. And most nutrients are labeled, and they're going to go somewhere. Fat is labeled. It's labeled by this kind of a device right here called an apolipoprotein, or an apolipoprotein. It is stamped on it and becomes a part of the little molecule, and it tells it where to get off in the train of the blood, do you see? So when it gets to a certain station, it's going to get off there at that station, depending on what its address is. If it comes like this, just the inner core of fatty acids or free fats, it gets an altogether different address label from this one that has the complete unrefined fat, do you see? This one, the unrefined fat, will get off in the liver or the muscle or some other place. If it's uncombined, it's going to get off on the hips or the tummy or maybe the heart valves or the arteries, do you see? So we want to be careful there. We want to know what we are, know who we are, whether we can afford to eat a free fat. So act accordingly. And then also our genetics plays a part. I mentioned to you earlier that we did this study on between 25 and 30 people with blood alcohol. At the end of the day, I had racks of blood, test tube racks of blood, the blood all in neat little rows with numbers on them. And on my pad, I had the number corresponding to the name of the person. So I picked up one tube that had milky serum. You understand what I mean? And so I picked it up and I looked at the number and I said, oh, poor man. I really hate to have to tell him that he's got milky serum, because that implicates the person's heart. So I put it back down and noted the number and I looked down on my chart and it was mine. And I thought, oh, what did I eat that made me have such milky serum? And at that time at Uchi Pines, we had a large number of people. A bunch of students from Southern were helping us do some work. And so we were feeding from my kitchen about 30 people every day. And so we could get from Tom Houston Peanut Company, which is the largest peanut company in the world, right there in Columbus, Georgia, right, our nearest town, we could buy peanut butter for 30 cents a pound. And so we'd buy the peanut butter and serve it in bowls, big serving bowls like they're serving in the cafeteria here. We'd serve those on the table every day, and the young people would serve themselves generously, and so did those of us who were other workers, even though we weren't so young. We would serve generously. Also, it was inexpensive food and very tasty and very nourishing. So we all partook of it very generously. And so as I was thinking back, I thought, ah, peanut butter. Yes, it has a type of fat in it that's likely to cause people who have a certain genetic makeup to have milky serum. And so I decided, well, I need to limit my peanut butter. And so from that day till this, I've limited peanut butter intake. Sometimes I'll go for a long time and not eat it at all. But if you know who you are, then you can behave accordingly, can't you? So you need to study who you are. And here's where lab tests. I would never have known that I had milky serum if I hadn't had a tube of blood there to show me that I did after eating certain types of foods. So I tell you this to let you know that in my opinion, a lab test once a year is more important to you than a physical exam. Everybody understands they ought to have an annual physical, but I say it's more important to get the annual laboratory tests, because you do a physical on yourself. You know whether something is functioning just right. You know if there's a lump here or there. You know if something hurts or something is discolored. But you have no way that you can know what's going on in your blood unless you have a lab test most of the time. So get the lab test and do your physical yourself. Now, I have several hands. Am I to take questions now? At the end. Okay. Would you write your question down, because I want to get it? And you will think you want to know what, you will think you will want to know it so much that you will not forget it, but you will. I will take just this one. Is it true for almond butter? The kind of fat is different in almond butter, and probably even people with my genetic makeup could take almond butter easier than they could take peanut butter, could metabolize it and handle it better. And the same might also go with cashew butter. You can, and soy butter, the soy butter that's made from the soy beans, where the soy beans. Now, soy beans may have peanut oil in them. So the soybean butter may have peanut oil in it. So again, you need to know who you are and what your genetic makeup is, so that you can know how the knowledge is beneficial to us, isn't it? And people are indeed destroyed for lack of knowledge. How much fat do we need a day? Very little. We don't need much. I used to give it in grams, but how much is a gram? Is it a half pint or a bushel, or is it a speck, or, you know, people don't know what it is. So it's just a little, just very little. Teaspoonful at a meal is probably generous for most of us and not at all needed. Why do we put fat on food? We do have essential fatty acids. Do we have to put fat on food to get our essential fatty acids? No. Why do we put fat on food? It makes it taste better. And if you have diabetes, you probably don't need your food to taste better. It already tastes too good. If you're overweight, same thing. You don't need that. All right, let's continue. So much we could say about fats. Of course, some people have devoted a whole lifetime to the study of fats, and we could too, but let's go on. Function of carbohydrates. You can see all of these functions. I'd like to focus on a couple. Antitoxins. Carbohydrates will tie up toxins. They're good for us. Don't eliminate them. But it is whole grains, whole beans, not the decorticated kinds, that will tie up toxins. Same thing is true with carbohydrates and the anti-carcinogen function. Ties up. It hooks onto cancer-producing agents, takes them out of the body without harming you. So we need carbohydrates. We need beans. We need grains. So these are tips to us. And then, of course, cleansing and stimulating the bowel. Nerve and blood vessel precursor material, these are also very important things for us. Now, carbohydrate digestion. In 1 hour, 1 inch of jejunum absorbs 1 ounce of glucose. This can help us to know how much glucose the jejunum can handle. And we must be very, very guarded in the amount of sugar that we take, whether it be fructose or glucose, such as Karo syrup, which is glucose. Fructose is in confectioner's sugar, is confectioner's sugar. More difficult for us to handle than glucose, fructose, purified fructose is. In fruits, we handle, as it is in its combined form, in fruits, we handle fructose fine. But when it is purified, as in confectioner's sugar, it is not so easy for us to handle. Where would you ever get fructose? Well, you can read it on labels, but someplace that you might not think it is present in such large quantities is in wedding cakes. Do you know how a wedding cake is iced? Get some Crisco and get some confectioner sugar, mix them together, and ice the cake with it. One of the most unhealthful things that you could eat. So when you go to the wedding, hope that they have some nuts or some crackers that you can eat if it's mealtime. If it's not mealtime, then go and ask for a glass of water. And enjoy your water. But it's a 50th wedding anniversary. I'll only do this once in a lifetime. Could I do it then? No, if you're the one having the 50th wedding anniversary, you're far too old to be able to handle eating between meals. So don't eat snacks. And if you're young, you want to keep your health so that when you're in advanced old age, you'll still be healthy. Okay, factors influencing digestion. The form of carbohydrates, we've already gone over some of these. Stomach irritants, vinegar, spices, black and red pepper. Alcohol is a stomach irritant. Poor chewing increases hydrochloric acid production in the stomach. What would hydrochloric acid in the stomach in excessive quantities do for us? It might give you ulcers. Okay, some other nutrients to avoid disease. Hyaluronic acid present in fruits, nuts, olives, and avocado. A deficiency of hyaluronic acid may cause detachment of the vitreous. Where is that located? In the eyes. And when the vitreous becomes detached, this is not the retina now, when the vitreous, which is an actual structure, it's not just fluid, it's an actual structure, and it becomes detached from the retina, and it makes permanent floaters for you, which can be annoying. They don't reduce your vision too much, except that if they are right in front of your the place where you have to focus. Glucosamine, fruits, grains, and beans, and a deficiency leads to skeletal disorders, as everyone knows who has arthritis and takes glucosamine sulfate. Choline, beans, peas, and whole grains, keeps tendons firm, helps you not to get sprained ankles or strained muscles or tendonitis. Deficiency results from refined grains, junk foods, soft drinks, and causes decreased appetite control. That's important for us to know. May also increase the likelihood that we would get nerve disorders. What's a nerve disorder that diabetics can have? Neuropathy. Diabetic neuropathy. So one thing that can help you is choline. Where do we get it? Beans. I feel that diabetics should take beans at every meal. Small serving. We don't have to take a lot. But quarter cup, or maybe even a little less if you're a very diminutive person. Let's study diabetic neuropathy a little bit. Myo-inositol is another nutrient put in foods to help us fight disease. Myo-inositol is present in large quantities in cantaloupe, citrus, legumes, and especially soybeans. So the person with diabetic neuropathy should concentrate on these foods, emphasize them in your menu. That's not to say that you need to limit it to that. And in the summer, when you can get cantaloupe inexpensively, then peel them, cut them, and scoop the seeds out. Blend them in your blender so they'll take up less room in the freezer, and freeze them. In the wintertime, take them out, take out a package, and make a sort of sherbet from it. And if you pour a little soy milk on that, it's very nice. Homemade soy milk. Homemade soy milk? Anybody make homemade soy milk? Oh, a number of you do. Do you have a soy making machine? Soy milk making machine? You can buy them now for under $100. And if you use milk on a regular basis, like several times a week, I would advise that you get a soy milk maker and make your own. You can get them on the internet. Just put soy milk maker. A brand is Soy Toy. There's also a Soy Joy. And there are several others. Not just these companies make the soy milk making machine. There are others as well. And if you go on the internet, you can buy them under $100. You should be able to buy it under $100. If you can't, then write to our country store, and I think that they could get that for us. I'll talk with this young lady up front. Would you raise your hand, Amy? Amy is my assistant, Amy Pershing, and she can make sure that you get a soy toy for under $100 or some soy milk maker. Now, diabetic retinopathy, hyaluronic acid, which is present in fruits, especially blueberries, but all fruits, nuts, olives, and avocados. For overweight, high fiber foods with a high water content and low calorie foods. And one of the very best foods in this regard for all of this is cantaloupe, isn't it? So every diabetic should have a flower pot if you're in a condo or a high-rise apartment. Have a flower pot with a cantaloupe vine growing in it so that you can get a few cantaloupes from that. And then buy cantaloupes a lot. They're, especially if you're overweight, people who are overweight can eat cantaloupes. They're just very low in calories, high in water, taste very good. And if you freeze them and then freeze them in small chunks, put them through a Champion juicer, and pour a little nut milk on it, it is just absolutely good.
I cannot eat cantaloupe or watermelon or any other food.
Can't eat cantaloupe or watermelon with any other food. There are many people who will tell you that. And so for you, don't take them with any other food. But you might be able to take them if they're blenderized or made into sherbet with another food taken as a dessert. Now, osteoporosis. What can you do for osteoporosis? Well, there is a very good mineral combination. I believe it's called triboron. It has magnesium, zinc, and boron in it. May have also some calcium. That is good for osteoporosis. Boron, zinc, and magnesium are just as important to your bones as calcium. We should not emphasize calcium to the exclusion of these others for osteoporosis. They're all necessary. And none of them will do you as much good unless you exercise. Now, there is an exercise for the spine, one of the few things that has been shown to actually increase the density of the spine, and it is done very easily. If it weren't so undignified to do it, I would ask someone to do it, but you have to get on the floor, and then you raise everything off the floor except for your abdomen, and you just lie on the abdomen, and you start with 1 or 2 or 3 seconds, whatever is comfortable for you, and build it up a second every day, holding the feet off the floor and the head off the floor and the arms off the floor. This way, start with the arms this way, and when you get to be really good, then you hold them up this way, which is ever so much harder than the other way. But that has been shown to be to help you to actually increase the density of the bones in the back. Yes? In the spine. No, you lie on your tummy. Now, you can also do one on the back. You can do one on the back and support your weight, lift the midsection off the floor, and support your weight on your shoulders and on your heels. That's called bridging, where you make a bridge. The other one is called winging, where you make wings. Okay, some other nutrients, sorbitol in apples for constipation, polyphenols in apples, grapes, and blueberries for viruses, glyceriza from licorice for infections, dental caries, very good antimicrobial, and that's how it works in the mouth, is that it inhibits the streptococcus, inhibits or prevents the growth of the streptococcus that encourages caries, dental caries. Question? Licorice root will encourage the retention of sodium in the blood. And so people who have high blood pressure need to watch the blood pressure if they take licorice root to make certain that the blood pressure doesn't go up with it. Grapefruit is only if they're taking a certain kind of medication that interferes with the breakdown of the medication. Okay, flavones from soy for heart and cancer, saponins. I don't know that I need to go through all of these for you. Indole 3-carbinol from cabbage and broccoli. It can be used for warts and for cancer. Adhesin inhibitor from cranberries. Most people don't know that blueberries are just as good as cranberries. For this anti-adhesin factor, which makes it so that germs cannot adhere to the mucosa of the bladder or the kidneys and certain parts of the prostate or seminal vesicles. And so it's very good in cystitis and other pelvic problems. Okay? Now, controls of the appetite. Diabetics need to know this because insulin is the best appetite stimulant known to man. Insulin is the best appetite stimulant known to man. And therefore, if the insulin level is high, as it is in type 2 diabetes, then the appetite is stimulated by the insulin. So we want to do what we can to make the insulin level in the blood only enough to cover the amount of food we're taking. So the sugar level goes up to here. We want the insulin level just to be up to here, not way up to here. Why would it ever be way up here? Because your cells may be resistant to insulin. If they are resistant to insulin, then you cannot get glucose into the cell because insulin cannot go in. Glucose cannot go into the cell without insulin. And if the cells are starved for glucose because there are no mouths or ports to take in for insulin to dock into with glucose attached so that glucose can go into the cell to give it energy and heat and make its raw materials and so forth. And so because of that, the pancreas says, ooh, glucose is building up in the blood. Let's churn out some more insulin. And so it does. It grinds it out. And your insulin level goes sky high, and that's the hallmark of the person with type 2 diabetes. High insulin levels. When the insulin level goes up, what happens to the appetite? It becomes absolutely amazing, doesn't it? Amazingly good. Exercise will help to balance hormones and will assist in control of the appetite. Regularity, 2 meals a day, and supper for but few. Now, how do you know if you need supper? Well, it's the tape measure test. It's the scales test. It's the know who you are test. Most human beings only need 2 meals a day. Some who have had operations on their stomachs may need 3. But for the most part, nobody needs more than 3. Okay. Appetite stimulants, refined, fermented, salty, or sweet foods. They all stimulate the appetite. Coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate, and spices that irritate the stomach. All of these are stimulants to the appetite. Insulin levels, well, I mentioned about that. Okay, more control to the appetite. Choline. Fruits and vegetables, I mentioned choline, I think, already. And your habits of snacking or entertaining or eating out. And various disorders in your schedule, your surroundings, your sleep schedule, whether you're late for work, and a number of other things of that nature. Now, how can you design your diet, say, for an anti-cancer diet? Here are some. Cabbage family, yellow and green vegetables and fruits. Celery, asparagus, tomatoes, apples, peaches. Citrus fruits, they act as tamoxifen. What is tamoxifen? It's a chemotherapeutic agent used in breast cancer to keep estrogen from docking into some of the ports. Same kind of thing as with insulin. So you want to have the ports already occupied with something. And plant estrogens are good. Citrus fruits have lots of these substances that will dock into the estrogen port, making it so that estrogen cannot dock in there. And it protects against breast cancer even after the diagnosis has been made. Flaxseed, lignans, these have anti-estrogen activity. Garlic, we've mentioned. Soybeans, all beans. These are all good. This just to let you see that so far as heart disease is concerned, if you're a meat eater, your chances of heart disease are 55% compared to 39% for an ordinary vegetarian and 14% for a vegan vegetarian. Cancer, same kind of spread, 42% down to 26%, down to 3-9% for the vegan. More things on ovarian cancer. Avoid dairy foods. Why is that? Because of galactose. Galactose is known to irritate the ovaries, especially the ova. Some cases of infertility have been linked to galactose sensitivity. And lactose is a double sugar composed of glucose and galactose. So when it is processed in the body or made into buttermilk, yogurt, cream cheese, or cottage cheese. Galactose is free, and then you're more likely to get cataracts from the galactose and ovarian irritation, which can lead to, and I wish I had time to tell you about studies done in England on yogurt and how cancer of the ovary is 33 to 35% higher in women who eat yogurt 3 times a week. Considered a health food, but it's not good for the ovaries. Coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate, tobacco, alcohol, long-term use of hormones, and live by the laws of health. Now, I'm going to skip these. Some of these I've already mentioned. These are tubes of blood, similar to the one that I was talking about earlier from the peanut butter that in mine. Now, I want to just talk with you a little bit about chronic progressive diseases such as type 2 diabetes, hypertension, these so-called lifestyle diseases. But I want to focus on only one thing, and that is that the tissues of persons destined to develop these chronic progressive diseases, in their tissues there are deposits of products of inflammation. Now, if you're not in the custom of getting a C-reactive protein once a year, let me encourage you to start getting it, because this is a marker for many different kinds of diseases. First began to be known in relation to heart disease, but now it is recognized as being related to a number of diseases, including Alzheimer's and strokes. Amyloid plaques. These amyloid deposits are associated with inflammatory cytokines. And I wish I had time to tell you about all these wonderful things. I just want you to know that they are there, that a divine designer has designed us in such a complex way that we have everything needed if we will follow his prescription. The 8 natural laws of health. If we will follow this prescription, we will find all the things. We still live in a wicked world. We're still going to be battered and badgered by a lot of things in this world that can bring disease. But just so that you can know that there are a lot of things. Now, C-reactive protein. This is a test that reveals whether you have inflammatory substances in your blood. If they're in your blood, they're likely in your tissues. In fact, probably coming from your tissues where they are stored, as in Alzheimer's or heart disease or strokes and things of that nature. In overweight boys, weight gain tripled the C-reactive protein. Other things that increase C-reactive protein: diagnostic angiography in coronary artery disease and angina. A sedentary lifestyle increases these inflammatory factors. Get up and get busy. Get out and exercise. Move every time you can. Don't let a gentleman pick up your handkerchief if you drop it. You pick it up. You need to move. Of course, he needs to move too. Stress and tension, competitive games, computer games. This one is really sad. And animal-based diet. But even computer games can make us increase our inflammatory substances. Weight loss and exercise will halve the C-reactive protein in most people. A reduction of blood pressure, if it is up, will halve the C-reactive protein in most people. Control of blood sugar, if it is elevated, and reduction of blood lipids where they are needed. All of these, when these measures were taken, cardiac events were reduced from 44% to 24% in one eight-year study, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2003.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2007, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There is no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.